Ladies and gentlemen, pray silence, please. I have the great pleasure of moderating this session with Secretary Albright on the subject of her book, The Mighty and the Almighty, Reflections on America, God, and World Affairs. As someone said, presumably the Secretary represents the mighty and I represent the almighty. But I don't think it's been fashioned in quite this way. An English friend of mine many years ago said, in order to sell books in England, you had to be able to include three things, and ideally in a title: sex, religion, and royalty. And so the ideal opening line went, "Take your hand off my knee," the Duchess said to the Archbishop. And so it strikes me that a book on America, God, and World Affairs has the same effect in this country. And to the effect, the fact that this room is so full of celebrity mongers suggests to me that at least one of these three, and maybe all three, interest you. But whether it's America, God, or World Affairs, we're all interested in Madeleine Albright and what she has to say. Lived happily in her administration as Secretary of State, and we have been delighted that she has not lost her tongue since she left office, and in fact has become very prolific since she left office. And this book is a particularly intriguing kiss-and-tell book on subjects in which we are all keenly interested. The relationship of religion to policy, religion and policy in international affairs, and the peculiar burdens that that may impose upon the United States. And it is very nice to have a book on these subjects from somebody who knows something about something in the book. That is not always the case, as we can testify. And so here we have a first-person book from deep experience on subjects of great interest to all of us. And the format is going to be this. The Secretary has agreed to answer the question that we all have in mind as the very first. And what do you expect, what do you believe you, in fact, you have done? It's a very good question. Every author should have to answer that, and the Secretary has agreed to do that. And then she's going to read a bit from it. And then, since, although I realize you've all come to hear me, I suspect that you might like to hear from her. And so, at that point, we'll open it up to questions, even those questions which are, in fact, in the form of speeches, which you wish you had been given an opportunity to make. Even those of you who wish you had written the book, or could have written it better than the Secretary, will have a chance to say something or other. If it gets too outrageous or egregious or self-aggrandizing, I will interfere and exercise the prerogatives of the chair. But basically, it's Secretary Albright, you, and the book. And for the next hour and a half or so, that will be our pleasure and delight. So without further ado, I give you Secretary Madeleine Albright, and we are at your feet.
Thank you very much. Thank you. But the only spicy chapter in here is entitled The Devil and Madeleine Albright. I'm sorry. Why did I write the book? I think that I come from a generation of international relations scholars and practitioners who always used to say, this or that particular conflict is complicated enough, let's not bring God and religion into it. But it became evident to me, even as I was secretary, that that was not a realistic approach. Because, for instance, take an issue on which we worked so hard, which was the Middle East peace, Jerusalem. If Jerusalem were just a real estate issue, we would have dealt with it some time ago. But when both parties believe that that piece of land was given to them by God, there's another presence in the room. And so at Camp David in the summer of 2000, we began to talk about a new concept, which we call divine sovereignty, for the area of the holy places, because the Muslims on top wanted to dig down and the Israelis below wanted to dig up, and who is really sovereign in that area? And so we thought, well, God is sovereign. Of course, we didn't get there, but it was interesting to talk about the concept. And then, because already at that time, there were issues about Sudan. This time it was the north and the south. In general terms, the north being Muslim, the south being Christian. And I was visited by some high school students from a Christian school who knew more about the conflict than many people that I had met. And it just made me realize even more just those examples of how you couldn't leave God and religion out of foreign policy. And then 9/11 happened. And so it became very clear to me that this was a book that needed to be written. Now, I think all of you who know me know this. I am not a theologian, and I haven't turned into a religious mystic. I am a problem solver. And it is from that perspective that I'm looking at this book. This is not a soundbite book, and there are about many ideas in it, but four that I just would like to put on the table and then read a bit and then have a discussion, as Peter said. The first thing that I believe is that the United States has to have a moral foreign policy. I believe that fully because of the kind of country that we are, the way that we were founded, and generally about America's role. That is very different than having a moralistic foreign policy where we're telling everybody else what to do. So we have to represent our own values, but we don't have to go around shaking our finger at everybody else. The second point that I talk about is I don't believe that we're involved in a clash of civilizations, but I do believe that we're involved in a battle of ideas. And that is a very important distinction because it requires us to really put forward what we believe in and engage in a dialogue. Now, when President Ahmadinejad wrote to President Bush, it was a horrible letter, and I never thought that President Bush and President of Iran should become pen pals. But I do think if you look at the letter, in addition to all the terrible language and saber rattling, there were some very important points about social justice, about America's role, a variety of issues. And even as I was at the rather peculiar meeting we had at the White House between the president and the former people, as I call us, I did suggest to the president that somebody at a very high level needed to give a speech to respond to what was in that letter. I also say in my book that while Osama bin Laden is definitely evil, he is not talking about trivial matters. And so I think it's very important for us to engage in this battle of ideas. The third point I make in this book is a little bit what Dr. Land said this morning, and that is that I am very troubled by what's going on in Washington, where you barely speak, in my case, to a Republican, or a Republican speaks to me. It's very unusual when you actually get together for a meal and everybody says, oh, isn't this unusual? We're talking to each other. When we all actually used to talk to each other, and I have always believed in a bipartisan foreign policy. I am now looking at Senator Sam Brownback from Kansas, a very conservative Christian senator. But for decisions made by my parents, I might have been going to a synagogue instead of a church. And then I was born in Czechoslovakia. My father was a Czechoslovak diplomat. And when the communists came in 1948, he left. We came to the United States. He asked for political asylum, and we moved to Denver, a place we had no idea where it was. So, but for that, I would not have become an American citizen. I would have probably been teaching history at Charles University in Prague. So I use my life as an example of the fact that group identity is something that can be changed by choice or by necessity, and that therefore we need to focus on the role of the individual. And there are a lot of people who then will say, but that's an American idea, that's a Western idea. But if you go back, and as I had, into fulfill America's, what I believe, required role without making it sound as if we're always right and then take credit for everything, I think it would help if we occasionally said we hadn't done it the right way, that we needed the help of others. And to me, indispensable never meant alone. We might be the managing partner or the first among equals, but never alone. And I think that's where we get into trouble with the triumphalism.
Yes, sir.
Secretary, what do you feel about the U.S. policy with in regards to both the Iran and South Korea of letting North Korea of letting other nations conduct the?
Well, first of all, I think that both Iran and North Korea are pretty horrible countries run by dictatorial or authoritarian systems. So I don't disagree that they're awful. I would never have put them in, I never would have called it the axis of evil. Because I think that by linking them together, the wrong message comes out of Iraq. The message, in the simplest way to say it, is if you don't have nuclear weapons, you get invaded, and if you do have nuclear weapons, you don't get invaded. Because we have never invaded the Soviet Union or China or France, for that matter. So, you know, we don't, we are, so the message is wrong. I also, and I'll maybe pick up again on the North Korean thing. We had a terrible time with North Korea. North Korea is a dangerous place. I don't know how many of you have been to the demilitarized zone, but it is like some remnant of the Cold War. On the south side, it's like 40 miles from Seoul, the capital of South Korea. There are troops lined up on the North Korean side, and it's scary in a number of ways. In 1998,